I want to talk a little bit about modeling grid-based computer systems, and more specifically within the arena of public health applications. Okay. Public health applications. So let's take the scenario. There's a lot of pressure to adapt public health applications to forthcoming grid architectures and platforms. And really that would take place in three stages. You would typically start by porting some legacy public health application to the grid in a minimalist fashion. You would perhaps provide service-based interfaces for your database and separate out your client-server components, perhaps onto different nodes. And that would give you your initial version of your application onto the system. Then you might say, oh, well, now I have this legacy application on the grid, and there are all kinds of other interesting silos of data, like for CA tissue and CA array, and I would like to use those in association with the application that I've just ported. So the second stage might be to take new silos and more data and make those available to those existing applications within the context of the architecture that you've got for your application. And the third stage you want to get to is probably to derive new native grid applications, ones which are designed from the ground up to exploit grid and service architectures. So, however, there are some risks to adopting grids for public health applications. Performance bottlenecks. You're not quite sure about what the effect of the grid is going to provide on the performance of your application and whether you need to take across its existing platform to the grid, or whether you're going to buy new hardware and put a new grid node up to support it. You're going to have some impact from other grid applications upon your legacy system. So if I put my legacy system on the grid, other grid applications that are out there may have access to my data silo now and would have a performance impact on my legacy application ported. On the other hand, my applications, especially if I go to that second stage and start using other silos for my application, I'm going to have a significant effect, perhaps, on other grid users out there on the grid. I also, in a client-server arrangement with the silos that I have, I may have designed my error handling and my timeouts and that for access to data somewhat differently than will be found on the grid with a rather larger set of silos with more information. So what I might be patient to handle timeouts in an appropriate manner on my legacy application. Now in a grid environment, I'm not quite sure whether this thing really has timed out and stopped, or whether I'm just not patient and need to wait longer. So there's kind of architectural issues with the application which don't migrate forwards necessarily to the grid. And my design decisions, when I'm moving from that stage of even from the porting of the legacy application initially onto the grid, I have to make design decisions without necessarily the knowledge of how I should really be designing it in an ideal world to run on the grid. I don't have the same appreciation and understanding as existing grid developers have. I don't have that history. And like all things that are for early adopters, they have a steep learning curve. Okay. Now, these risks carry with it some consequences if I don't deal with them. A whole aspect of projects voting with their feet. If I put my legacy application on the grid and the grid does not provide me with the performance that I need, or other grid users are impacting the performance that I expect, then from a project perspective, I might decide to pull my project from the grid. It may not be suitable for me. On the other hand, if I put my application on the grid and I make use of all the other resources and create a problem with performance for other users on the grid, the existing grid user community may ask me to leave. So I could end up with a loss of credibility for the grid provider if we're pulling applications on and off, certainly a loss of credibility for the project owner trying to move their legacy applications. And we've reduced the cooperative opportunities. Here we are with applications that we're now not running on the grid and continue to run in isolation, and we're not making the kinds of leverage that we would expect from this new technology. So we're squandering the benefits of it. And there's also widespread financial risks as a result. For large projects, you may be talking about projects that have hundreds of millions of dollars at risk. If it's two or three or four institutions working in cooperation, that may be even considerably more than that. The viability of entire projects may be threatened. And if you have this failure in porting legacy applications, if I start at that bottom layer trying to get my initial legacy application to go and I can't, I may have to put large sums of money into fixes and upgrades. And if I am reusing my hardware from the prior system to the to the new system, there's a loss of production. All the time that I can't be, my hardware isn't down because I'm not running my legacy application, and it's not performing correctly on the grid, I've lost all that production. And that's a cost to the entire user community. And it's a political threat to future grid projects. If this porting of applications to the grid is not successful, then people are going to see and look and learn, and perhaps they won't port their applications either. So I thought a little bit about creating a model and running simulations. How about if we build a formal model of the system? That would be good. I mean, we could do what-if analysis. We could plan on what our nodal topology looks like, how big nodes have to be, how small they have to be, how we would integrate our legacy application or applications, and how we would make that step to the second stage of incorporating the new silos into that application. And the output from such a model could drive part of the decision-making process to see how we would port our legacy applications to the grid. We could run lots of iterations for likely outcome, and it's one of these things where also in the modeling we would be not only interested in what the usual outcome is of our simulations on our grid-based systems, but also we're interested out in the tails of the curve here to see what the more in extremis problems could be. But this doesn't replace experience. Really here we're talking about things to validate design. There's no substitute for good core design on how to move an application into a new environment. But it does give us a way of validating that design before we spend too much money. So the things we need to predict. We need to predict system performance, where system performance may be analogous to grid performance, or it may be down to the single level of a single node. But we need to do some performance prediction. We also need to think about availability. We have a grid-based system, it's highly distributed, and the availability factors may be different than if we were running our client-server legacy application, perhaps on a cluster. Okay. We also have to, once again, be looking at those kinds of things where our architecture of applications is different. How do we handle query timeouts and such things? The whole modus operandi for the operator and the user may be considerably different. And we have to think about, once again, we have to kind of predict the effects of new applications and new components to those applications on the grid and vice versa. So let's take an example of an application migration. Say we were to model a production grid, for instance, CA grid, just for the sake of argument. And then we were to integrate an existing client server-based system. Once again, for the sake of argument, let's say an NCI SEA system, perhaps one in California or one in Utah. And incorporate the enhanced functionality that we want to attach that application to other data silos, so we have more than one silo, so we can do some different translational kinds of research and investigation. And now we need to simulate and predict the impact on the combined system. So here you see in the diagram we have a World Wide Web with a grid in the middle and the thing which looks like an aging Cray supercomputer up there, and all these NIH nodes and these grid services, the existing grid systems, and then you could see the other smaller boxes are perhaps NCI SEA nodes. We're all being irradiated. So here we go. Let's talk about a combined model. What would we like to do? Well, if we had built a model of the NIH CA grid network up here to the top right. We were to take, perhaps consider a couple of applications to begin with, like CA Tissue and CA Array, and figure out their workflow models and what their topology looks like, is to make a sort of miniature semi-grid, if you like. And when we calibrate that, we could go out and we could calibrate that against the existing production CA big environment. And then over here, we could go and take this NCI SEA system to the top left, and we could figure how that works, build a model for that. It's probably somewhat simpler because it's a client server-based system and it's just relative size of one node. And we could calibrate that quite well. So now we have two calibrated models that we know if we adjust them, tweak them slightly, change the size of nodes and that, we can actually do some tests to see if they do indeed predict where we need to be. And then we could combine those two systems. So here we are porting our legacy application in the red box and the blue box, and so we get a combined model, which is probably a pretty good indicator of those two models that we have separately, because we understand how those models are constructed and we can understand how they're integrated. So we have not an entirely calibrated final model, but one where we have a pretty high confidence reflects the configurations that we have. Okay, so if we were to do this, we need to use some modeling technique. And there are three main modeling techniques in common use today. The first is a continuous or numeric simulation. And that would be where you would probably have some kind of differential equation that describes everything, and many, many equations. So the whole thing, your whole system could be reduced to a number of numeric calculations. Probably not very applicable to our kinds of environment. We probably have too many nodes, too many different states, very, very complicated. We could do the same thing again with discrete event simulation, but once again, this is based on queuing theory, and it's simpler somewhat because it's only based on events. It's event driven. So you only have to worry about events. You don't have to worry about the time between events. But once again, this is kind of complex, and we have so many states and so much complexity in our model, and it really often doesn't map very well to queues. So that was probably not such a good one. And then there's a relatively more recent computer modeling concept that's based on agent-based modeling. And it's derived from good old John von Neumann and his concepts of cellular automata. And here in this model, agents represent functional components of a system. You can build an agent that represented a disk subsystem. You could build an agent that represented a bus, a network. You could represent an operating system. You could represent user processes and user threads. All these things could be represented by agents. And what we do is we program the interactions that these agents have on the agents that they are affected by. And therefore, we have a version of the system where we have lots and lots of agents all representing the system and how those agents interact and are related. And that provides us with how those things behave in the real world. And we can turn those agents on, watch all their interactions, and observe the outcome. And we can repeat this many, 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 many times. And at the end of it, we'll say, this is the most common thing that would happen here. The most likely outcome would be this. So within agent-based modeling, there's a number of issues that we have to address. The first off is that you can use agent-based modeling really to do two things. You can use it to provide analysis validation. You can have some model which is rather black box, and you run the model, and you look at the results, and you tweak the black box. It's a little bit like neural networks, and then you try it again and try it again until it represents what you want to do. It's really like an ASIC representing discrete components on a motherboard. Just keep running it until you get the thing that reflects. And you don't really have to have an understanding. The model that's inside that box doesn't really have to represent the real world. Or there's a design verification type, which is really functions, calibrates as a function of model variations. We vary the model, this is what happens. So you really have to have a model which is represented more accurately by our agents. And that's what the one that we decided to use. And there's types of simulation that it can be trace-driven. We can base the whole model on a set of ordered data. We could take a bunch of data from CA tissue or something and run a model based on that data and see what the outcome is with all the random variation that's built into our agents. Or we could have stochastic methods where our agents are driven almost entirely by probability distributions. Well, we really combined it here because we have a calibrated model. We have a bunch of calibration data. This is data that we know, performance data related to computer systems that we know what they're doing when they run a certain use case for CA tissue, CA array, or any of the SEER applications. And we've combined that with the stochastic methods that are used by the agents to provide some random variation with inside that. And agents can represent... In computer systems, there's a lot of work done on agent-based modeling where they represent processes or threads by an agent. So you have the same number of agents as you would have processes and threads within a system. Well, for us, that's extremely complicated. I can imagine a very large service vending a lot of data might have tens of thousands of processes in its process table while it's running. And to emulate those and how they all interact and that would be very, very, very complicated, probably way beyond what we would get a decent result for. So, or you can have a distributed model where you have entities within the system and they pass messages to each other and the agents represent those entities and they communicate through messages. So the variation is in the messaging. So we use, once again, a combination of the two. We use a process-orientated model but we use it as distributed. We have lots of agents and they're all distributed and they all talk to each other with messages. But we do it at the use case level, not at the process level. So we consider our unit of modeling to be the component of a use case which exists within any one system or node or the grid or the network. So here we see how we would use agent-based modeling for simulating the grid. Now, if you see the red pipe to the left, which is workflow A, we're considering workflow A runs through a number of nodes within our grid performing work. If that was the only and sole workflow running on any machine, there wouldn't be any degradation or delay as that workflow progresses, subject to the size of the computers at every node. Now you introduce a workflow B, but this workflow B, which is the blue, part of that workflow runs on the same node as workflow A. So we also consider our workflows to be agents, so that if two workflows coincide on the same node and are executing at the same time, then they will affect each other, and they'll introduce a delay into the finish of the application, and they'll reduce the number of transactions per second that a system is performing to. And therefore, you will be able to calculate what the model will be able to calculate what the delay is for that model. And so we have agents representing the nodes, we have agents representing the network, which we've not drawn here for simplicity, and we have agents actually constructed to represent workflow as well. So how the workflow agents interact with the node agents and the network agents describes how the load is affected on the system. So when we run our simulation, what do we do? Well, on the left, we have it's a data-driven model. This is where we're getting our data from our configuration data of what we want our grid to look like, and this is also where we're getting our data from our calibration from existing systems. And so, in this case, it's based in an XML document, and we read that information to set the model up. The next stage is we actually run the model. We construct the agents, we run the model, and we monitor the results, which is the colored graph thing at the box in the middle. In our case, we've been using a product called AnyLogic from XJ Technologies. And then we have some output. We're generating a bunch of output. At the moment, it's going to a CSV file, and we've built a Python-based product with a matplotlib that plots the output to get these graphs that you see here. So you can see that you would see a degradation in performance, and the fluctuation is the randomization. This was for one run rather than hundreds of runs, but you might make hundreds of runs of the model and smooth the output. So the early results from this is we've been modeling basic components of nodes and networks. It's a simplified agent model. I've not been considering the SEER component of moving the legacy application on at the moment, and I've been considering low-level building blocks only with a simplified grid. And the model scales as expected against the real world with concurrent load. Its response time or system latency increases as you do that concurrent work at a particular node where it hits both in location and in time. You're having a predictable system latency. And your transaction rate or TPS to any database style application declines as you would expect. And now the next stage, of course, to build a much more sophisticated model that scales all the way up to include the applications layer and the legacy systems as well. So, further investigations. We would like to change the model to reflect operational costs. One of the things at the moment, it's nice having a model which predicts node size, node capacity, number of nodes, node location. But the real thing that perhaps in a public health arena people want to know is, how much is this going to cost me? I don't care if it has 10,000 $100 nodes, that's fine, but if I've got six $10 billion nodes, it's very expensive. So there's certainly an operational cost involved. So you have the topology of the network contributes to that, the size and complexity of systems contributes, and also the number and location. Also, I'd like to do some build into the model a what-if simulation, so you could simulate RASM characteristics, reliability, availability, serviceability, usability, maintainability. So I can introduce network downtime, I can introduce flaky DNS servers, and all those kinds of things, to see what effect that would have on the model. What would I have to do to make my system go from a simple client-server standalone system that only I depend upon and I don't care if it crashes, to a system I've just integrated and provided as a grid service that now is a mission-critical 24/7 capability required because other people are depending upon it in exchange for their data. I'd also like to look at adding real-time sensors to the disk. So within the context of public health, pulling in real-time sensors, radiation sensors, air quality sensors, those kinds of things in real time, as well as the additional of real-time surveillance data, which may be overnight batch or whatever. But therein lies the problem. Those two things have very different characteristics, and you need to simulate what's the best solution, deliver the data now or batch it up and deliver it later. And the other thing that we can use the model for is we can do some real-time model feedback. If I have a workflow schedule, if I have a complex application that has multiple, and your application that you were exhibiting have multiple components to it, and you're running those on lots of different systems, one day those individual applications may be components that run on multiple systems, and then you have a workflow of how that information and how that execution spreads throughout the system, and you'd like to be able to set that up and run it. But the workflow scheduler, did that job finish, timeout, crash, stop, and I haven't seen the result? So you would like to be able to say to the model, you know, if we're 4 hours into something that the model tells you takes 2 hours, now you can incorporate that into the workflow scheduler. Also, grid services, you can feed the same thing back into grid services for availability and performance. And also for systems administrator and network and grid administrator training. You can do what-if scenarios, you can do this thing. So you don't actually have to build a humongous grid and disturb the grid in order to train people what to do, how to run it, and how to maintain it. So the migration of legacy systems to the grid requires some level of prediction. If what you're trying to predict the size of systems, the complexity of systems, the number of systems, you're trying to predict the impact of your applications on the grid and the grid's applications on you when they're very, very heavily intertwined in a very complex manner. And you also want to be able to plan new applications and plan a further augmentation of your existing applications. What's the effect going to be for those things when you put them on the grid? And lastly, we were trying to reduce risk. The idea here is that these are becoming large systems, becoming very expensive. The migration of mission-critical applications from the public health environment into this system is going to expect the same level of reliability and availability of the platforms that it is on. So we're trying to reduce that risk, reduce the developmental risk, and reduce the architectural risk. And I'd like to first of all say thank you to the National Library of Medicine for funding my training grant, for which I am eternally grateful. And if anybody goes to the National Library of Medicine, please tell them that their training grants are excellent. And I acknowledge Dr. Frey and Dr. Stays from my committee, who have been enormously helpful, and from Dr. Alan Thomas for suggestions on how to do some of the concurrent delay prediction from all these workflows, same point in the same point in place and time. Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Just a question. In maybe some of your future models, it seems like you're modeling, you know, some of the things that we've done are data service grid and then analytical service grid.
Yes.
But with grid technology, you can have compute grids as well.
Yes.
You can run these different operations in parallel.
Yes.
Your model in the future maybe to accommodate, you know, a compute grid.
Yes. And actually, to a certain extent, they're somewhat easier. You can say that the you can look at the application and say, okay, for over the life of this, some slice of the application, it's going to run this much integer-based arithmetic and this much mathematical-based thing, and you've got this many CPU pipes, and you know these things, other than to memory, don't really collide very much. So they're simpler than some of the more mixed environments where you're retrieving a data, either a record, computing a bit, another record, and then at the end of it, you compute a whole bunch that you may do in another location. So the scientific stuff is I think, a little more straightforward. The reason that I didn't really start down that is I thought this the idea of most legacy applications coming into it, certainly one we were thinking of, with SEER was a database-based application with some level of mathematical analysis or statistical analysis of that data. But yes, you'd have to do that for a complete model for sure. And there's probably other ones as well that we haven't. So sensors and surveillance feeds are also going to be important as well.
Yes? Just one quick question. You'd indicated that you were modeling, even with your early version, the performance hit as the
yes.
grid grows. And since it looks like you're using some of the apps that are sort of looking for immediate rollout, like SEER Tissue and others,
yeah.
What is the nature of that curve? Is it a linear curve?
No. it depends. For CPU performance, it's largely linear. You have a time-sharing system, and the system divides on a time slice these days, 100 milliseconds or whatever on average. So when you've got more than one or two applications on a two-core processor, you're out of CPU cycles, and you're just time-sharing it. So the effect is you always get a fairly linear delay. However, when you go into things which are disk-based, disk subsystem limited, memory bus bandwidth limited, and network based, they can look anything like from a nice slow decay curve to Zener-Dyer breakdown, bang, fall off the edge, depending on the nature of the technology underneath. And to some extent, that's a problem, because some disk subsystems are very simple. They're SAT3 drives, and you've got a couple of them. They're very straightforward. But now, when you've got this hierarchy of RAID 50 systems, and they're on EDS remote disk subsystems, that can all become very, very much more complicated. So I think you have to take a simplification of that and say, okay, what's in the real world, how does this look like you would think the experience is in the real world, and try and capture that rather than get down to the true essence of what's behind it. Otherwise, you'd be back down to the process level modeling as well, and the thread level modeling. And I don't think it's fine if you wanted to model one system and how its disk IO was, but you can't do it for the wide variety of hardware and vendor uniqueness of things in the grid. You have to take an approximation, which is why it's a design verification, I think. It doesn't stand to say you're going to build your grid to look like this because you got this data. You're going to say, well, if I build the grid to look like that, how much better is it than if I make it look like this and have this many nodes and don't have to worry about high availability. So it's kind of like it's not designed to be the final thing, but. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time.